Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 32nd episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from my home here in Harrisburg, South Dakota. Before I get to the show today, I thought I'd give you all an update on the podcaster throwdown for Halos of Hope. According to Nathaniel from Pearlescence Yarns on Saturday when I checked, Team Knitbar Girls continues to keep their sizable lead on all of the teams. Here's the count so far. Team Knitbar Girls, 110 hats. Team Naughty Girls, 45 hats. Team Craftlit, 6 hats. But we had a promise from her last week that she's going to step that up, so we're not going to give her a bad time. Team Sockaholic, 55 hats. Team Ready, Set, Knit, 12 hats. And again, I don't think we're getting current counts for Team Ready, Set, Knit, but we're going to work on that. The communication is a little different because they don't send theirs to Pearlescence. Anyway, I thought it was time that we started talking about prizes for the Podcaster Throwdown. We have a number of teams that have some prize offerings for members of their own team, and we're starting to get some great people that are contributing prizes just because, and we haven't really figured out, you know, how we're going to administer that or who they're going to or how that works, but we are going to figure it out. And we thought that the best way of starting this was to start a new thread on our Podcaster Throwdown Ravelry group so we can talk about the prizes that are being offered. I have decided that I'd also like to put some prizes into the mix. Since we don't have a team, Fiber Hooligans, I've decided to start by giving away 4 fashion show and dinner tickets to any Stitches event or team for the 4 people that do the best job of participating in the Podcaster Throwdown Ravelry group. Team captains are not eligible, of course. But don't worry, team captains, I have a few ideas about prizes for you if your teams win this thing. And I'll be talking about that in upcoming episodes of Fiber Hooligan. But for right now, what I'm saying is that there are some fashion show and dinner tickets to a Stitches of Your Choice next year, but I want to see some participation in the podcast to throw down Ravelry group in order to get those. And I'm going to task our wonderful Fiber Hooligans moderator and roving reporter, Tammy Burke, to keep an eye on that and be the judge of that. So I'm sure you probably can bribe Tammy, and I think you should try. I think she'd be up for that. Anyway, for all of you other Fiber Arts podcasters, please consider joining the Rumble. We'd love to have you create your own teams and join us for this great charity campaign. And please keep listening to Fiber Hooligan. We're going to try to have updates about the podcast to throw down at the top of every show. Okay, let's get to our show. In 1821, in Red River, Manitoba, John Pritchard, spurred on by Lady Selkirk, the wife of the governor of the colony, convinced the Hudson Bay Company to put up £10,000 to fund and organize the Buffalo Wool Company to process American bison fiber into fine women's hosiery. After spending the majority of the funds on rum, the company failed, of course. Fast forward 180 years, Ron Miskin, spurred on by his lovely and talented wife, Teresa, decided they could pick up where the Bay left off. Their corporate mission changed. The new corporate statement now states, don't spend all your money on rum. Save some for bourbon, scotch, and wine. Well, seriously, they have been playing with bison fiber for almost 10 years now, and in addition to their 6 hand-knitting yarns, they have a line of American-made ready-to-wear bison products, from socks to gloves to felt hats and insoles. They work very closely with the American Bison Association and ranchers from Kentucky to Nebraska. They are dedicated to promoting and conserving the American Plains bison and supporting the ranchers that raise them. They are also exceptional people, people of the finest character who believe in paying it forward. And so I am so pleased to have them on the show today. They are joining us from Kendall, Texas this morning. Good morning, Teresa and Ron, and welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Benjamin.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for having us. This is quite exciting.
Well, you know, I hope you enjoy being had, Ron.
Yeah. I enjoy it as often as I can.
And we're not going to comment too much. But so, Dale, thank you for joining us. And how are things in Texas today?
Well, things are nice and wet, and we missed an ice storm. So, nice and cool.
It's flipping cold. I'm actually wearing buffalo socks right now.
You're wearing buffalo socks. Well, that's good. It's too bad we can't get a visual of that. But yeah, we're just going to have to all of that. So I guess this really isn't your first time on the show. You've hosted the show before. For Fiber Hooligans that didn't catch that, there was a two-week period that I took some time out to work on Hopscotch software, the other company that I'm involved in, and Ron and Teresa were gracious enough to handle those interviews, and they did a great job. Interviewed Cornelia Tuttle Hamilton and Jerome Borski, and you did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you. That was it was a lot of fun, and truly, you know, Cornelia and Drew, just the most wonderful people. I mean, you set us up for success, so we hoped not to leave a train wreck in our path, but, you know, it was a lot of fun.
They were a lot of fun chatting with.
They are a lot of fun. They're good folks, and they're interesting. They actually have something to say. That's kind of people. But you were good. I mean, what was the intro to Drew's 3-time winner of Dancing with the Stars? He has 7 books to his name, two of which are coloring books. Really funny stuff. And I want to make sure I give credit where credit is due, because some of that great material that I read in your introduction, which is not true at all, of course, Fiber Hooligans, and if you fell for it, you know, I know it's Monday, but we all need another cup of coffee. That was written by you, Ron, and it was pretty darn funny.
Well, you know, sometimes you can't really take credit for it. Stuff just comes out of your mouth or off your fingers, and hopefully you don't offend somebody. So, you know, sometimes you do, but you try, and you try and have fun. And that's one thing I love about, you know, A, your group and the Fiber Hooligans in general, is they're here to have fun. So
yeah,
we want to have fun, too.
Yeah, they are. Teresa, let me ask. He really doesn't sit down and write this stuff. He actually just, it's just off the top of his head, this stuff rattles off, right?
It does. It really does. I mean, we just have a great time every day because you never know what's going to come out of his mouth.
Well, how do you deal that? Because you're out with him. Okay, you're out in the world with him, and he's telling somebody a tall tale. And, Ron, you're great at the tall tale. It's fantastic. I mean, I have nothing but admiration for that. People must be looking to you. You know, is it true? Is it not true?
Well, they do. I usually stand behind him over one of his shoulders and end up shaking my head. Yes, no, don't buy that, you know. Have to do a little validation sometimes because he's so serious when he's talking, and he can say it with such a straight face, and then when they walk away, I'm like, oh, that's not real.
Well, you know, being the child of two attorneys, I mean, it comes naturally.
Oh, my. Anyway, you are excellent at that, and I have nothing but respect for somebody that can stand straight-faced and tell somebody a story and see and watch to see how long they'll buy it. It's fantastic. So, you know, kudos to you. All right, let's move on to the actual interview part. Let's give our listeners a little background about both of you, and let's start with you, Teresa. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and get us to the point where you eventually got yourself involved with this Miskin character.
Well, I'm born and raised here in Fort Worth, Texas. Lived in a very small rural town outside of Fort Worth. Very small. Everyone had cows and horses. And from there, I met Ron at where I was working a second job, and it was the Fort Worth Hub, and he was a sous chef. And so literally he cooked his way into my heart. He would come and feed me dinner every night and show me his wares and his fascinating cooking skills from the kitchen. So
that's
how I met Juan.
We really got to
talking and realized that what we had in common was my cousin, and that we had actually met back in junior high and then met up with each other again, I guess, 10 or 15 years later. So it's always funny how things like that come back around.
Well, I knew that.
That is.
I knew then she was pretty hot, and you know, I had to have her. So it took me 20 years, but it worked out.
So we got to talk about the cooking thing, Ron, because you know, in the chat room right now, Dipot Goddess, that's short for Jeannie Randolph from Fiesta Yarns, basically said you got to love a man who can cook, and I don't think she's probably alone in that. So there you are, a nice guy, and you know, eventually you're supporting yarn habits, and you can cook. That seems to me to make you a triple threat man, as far as I'm concerned, and I think most of my listeners would agree. Tell me about the cooking thing.
Well, you know, I started working my way through college in restaurants, and I was, you know, the full intent was going to go to law school and follow in parents' footsteps. But at some point, I decided I liked the cooking better. It has always impressed women, and you know, when you can do that and make a living, that's a good thing. You know, it's not the typical 9-to-5, and I realized that I wasn't built to sit behind a desk and do that. And it's kind of transitioned nice into the yarn world because while I'm not really a knitter, making yarn is still a recipe. I mean, you have to, and there's creativity involved, and then when you're dying, you get to cook.
Say, right, you got to tell your listeners that it wasn't just normal cooking that you were doing. At the Forest Club, you were doing the ice sculptures with the chainsaw. You were doing some very exclusive dinners where you actually wove pasta into tennis rackets for the Davis Club. You had some other people where you actually did a sea bass and a pasta shell that you had made out of a clam with little pearl onions on it. I mean, so your creativity goes way back.
Yeah, and if there's any weavers out there who've never tried weaving with angel hair pasta, I got to recommend it. It is interesting. it is a challenge. They don't make a lot of pasta looms, so it's usually all done freehand, but it still can be done.
But there are a couple of pasta loom companies out there that we should say that we'll leave links for later on.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that's a new product we can bring.
Yeah, new product, yeah.
The linguine loom, yes.
The linguine loom. So now do I understand that you actually studied some culinary arts in Europe as well?
Because somewhere between junior, senior year of college, I decided to take some time off and just get out of the country. I'd worked at a summer camp up in Boston and met a lot of different people from all over Europe, and I thought I'd go and found a place in a restaurant and did an apprenticeship and just kept cooking. So it was just one of those things where you try and hone your skills and get to be the best that you can and do things that have not been done before and different. And with cooking is similar to yarn and the thought is until you invent a new ingredient, you're not going to do something new. So there's still that challenge of trying to better yourself and make something that people enjoy.
Well, it doesn't surprise me about you at all. Now, at Teresa, at the point that you met Ron, you were actually, I think, working at the same place that he was the chef at. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It's,
okay.
It's a historical private club that's oil men and famous people and stuff that go to this private club. So he was a sous chef there and doing some amazing things.
Well, later on, oh, go ahead. Please, go ahead, Ron.
I was going to say, so, I mean, it was kind of neat. We had different things. I've gotten to cook for both Bushes and for Pavarotti. We had, that was kind of funny. Pavarotti stayed with us for a week, and making him dinner every night was interesting.
Van
Jimmy
Clyburn.
Van Clyburn. Jimmy Stewart was a member, used to come in occasionally. And so you got to meet some interesting people, and we had fun with that. We met, you know, Vladimir Putin. We met Gorbachev.
Is that the one I told that it was scrap metal from when they were deorganizing the...
When they were decommissioning some of the Russian missiles, they brought in some pieces of them and were giving them out as awards.
Skylab, when they were, decommissioning Skylab. That was fun.
Oh, really? Wow.
He was a Russian interpreter, and he couldn't speak any English. And then the moment we got behind closed doors, and I was two of the staff members behind closed doors with everybody else, and he presents this big metal trophy, and he says, "What do you think this is?" And at first I'm shocked that he could speak English as well as he did. And then, of course, all I could think of is, it's scrap metal.
After you were in the restaurant world, and before there was the company you're in right now, I understand that you were a housing counselor for a while. Can you tell our listeners, you know, for how long you did that and what exactly that is?
I worked about 19 years as a housing contract counselor under the Section 8 program, which is a HUD-funded housing program. So basically you're help subsidizing rental assistance to people who are of low income and have needs in that area. So basically you're just in the social service program and providing the need, the families and people who are in need for that. It was a great program. Very government overseen. My part was a nonprofit agency that we worked at, so you were always working on a shoestring budget and trying to figure out how to get more things done in less time and still require all your obligations to receiving the funding. Met some amazing people through the program, helped a lot of people, because a lot of people think of welfare moms and stuff that are on Section 8, but really it's a third of it's your seniors. And the other third is everybody that's been out there working their entire life and come down with some form of an illness and that is unable to continue with that paycheck. So it was a great experience.
So you help people?
Yes, always.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me about you at all. It really doesn't.
No.
That seems to be just in your nature. That does. And so 18 years you did that?
Yeah, for 18 years. Did a little bit of everything. I finished out as a contract counselor, so I was pretty much working with the landlords, making sure landlords got paid, new contracts, and probably the complicated part is we help balance the checkbook every month where 10 to 12 people are writing out of a checkbook, which was always fun and interesting, trying to get a checkbook balanced before a check run, but it was great. Absolutely great.
But, well,
but I,
you know,
had,
again,
but I had the opportunity. I'm sorry.
It doesn't surprise me at all that you'd be the type of person to help people. You know, I want to bring something up real quick. I'm going to interject real quick. Before we get into your entry into the fiber arts world, I thought it was worth mentioning that you folks have three daughters. And from Facebook, I understand, Teresa, you just had a son. So congratulations on that.
We did, yes. He's a new, wonderful son-in-law that we have. And the kids are very, very happy. They got married here locally in Fort Worth because he's from McKinney and she's here from Fort Worth. But they now live in Orlando, Florida. So
it was pretty funny, though, on Facebook, when I posted, though, that we had a new son, people thought Teresa just had a baby. So we
right.
got a couple hundred congratulations and things.
Well, my phone's blowing up, and I'm going, congratulations for your new son. I'm just going, what new son?
And as I said to you when we were talking about this before, I'm sure that's the first time on social media that a post has, you know, ever been misread and misinterpreted. So, you know, I'm sure it won't ever happen again.
Probably never again, but finally had to go back and post it. You know, he was born 5'11 and 165 pounds. Yeah, that
really
got a good response.
Them also.
No, I remember when you posted it. I clicked like because it's a big deal. You know, I have a daughter. I'm thinking about what that's going to be like when, you know, she gets married, and I thought it was a big deal. And I understood what you were saying because there was a picture that accompanied the post of the wedding. So I didn't really quite understand how people, you know, didn't get that. But still, I was entertained all weekend long over it. It was great.
Us too. And, of course, that prompted the discussion of, you know, if you have three daughters, do you need a fourth, or do you want to try for a son? And yeah, I still have the bruises from that discussion.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure I would have gone there. You know, I'm really not sure I would have gone there. But it doesn't surprise me that you did go there, Ron. And, you know, I'm not going to say any more about that. Okay, let's start talking about
it. Move on.
let's move on. Let's start talking about how you got started with the Buffalo Wool Company, Ron. And I want to start with you because I believe this started with your dad, Cecil. Will you tell us that story? It's a good story.
Sure. I, like you said, I've been in the restaurant business. I had fallen in with a group of people and managed to buy a small Mexican food chain here in Texas. And had been doing that for a number of years. I had the opportunity to get bought out and retire, and I wanted to spend some more time with the daughter and coach basketball team and things like that. And of course, I was going to start a small software company. My father has been raising bison since I was, 10, I guess, when we moved to Texas. And for years, in the spring, when they shed, you'll pick up bits of fluff off the fence lines, off the bushes and everything, and we'd throw it in a box in the barn. Didn't know why or whatnot, but you knew it was pretty and you knew it probably shouldn't be totally wasted. So I guess we're going back almost 12 years, the National Bison Association kind of put out a challenge to ranchers to see if anyone could help find a way to raise the value of the animal. Raising bison up to then, the meat prices were fairly low, there wasn't a lot of demand, and raising bison was a losing proposition. So the National Bison Association is very strong in really trying to support the ranchers and find a way to make the animal more profitable. And you start looking at all the parts that aren't being used, the hair being one of them. Well, my father is an eBay fanatic and put this box of buffalo hair, you know, it was about a 4-pound box of nasty, dirty shed buffalo fiber, he put it up on eBay. And a lady in Boston and a lady in Colorado had started bidding against each other. And you're watching it, and it goes up, and it goes up, and it goes up. And it finally closed at like $450. And, of course, the first question out of your mouth is, why? What are you going to do with this stuff? And turns out the lady in Massachusetts, who won, his name is Elizabeth Lang. She's a master spinner, and she explained that, you know, it's a little bit felted, and there's a lot of vegetable matter in it, terms we didn't understand. But she was very kind and very patient and explained to us that if you're going to process bison fiber, this is, you know, you need to collect it before it gets rolled in the twigs and sticks and things like that, and maybe you find a better way to clean and not get felted. So Dad starts looking at the bison hides, and because in the leather industry, there's a chemical called sodium hydrosulfide that they use to burn the hair off the leather when they're tanning it for things. And the hair gets washed on the drain, and it's a nasty chemical effluent. You don't want to use that in – you don't want that in the groundwater. So we started looking at ways to remove the hair from hides without using that, because this is one other source of bison fiber. So we start playing with enzymes. There's a protease enzyme called that it's actually in cold water tied that dissolves keratin. I mean, it's basically used for removing food particles from your clothes, but it also works in dissolving the root ball on the fiber. So we started playing with that, and it ended up finding a way to remove the hair without using the harsh chemicals, without destroying the fiber, and without destroying the grain of the leather. So we did that for a while. We worked on shearing hides and all sorts of other methods. And then we also started a program harvesting the fiber from ranchers. We're putting out street sweeper brushes. So in the spring when they're shedding, the bison will rub up against it, keeps it off the ground. And going back to the residence and like my being retired or semi-retired, Dad called me once and asked if I would go out to the ranch because he was having a load of hides delivered. And, you know, basically a dump truck came and dumped 400 raw buffalo hides in the middle of June in Texas, which, you know, I think there was more pounds of flies than there were of hair.
I would think, yeah.
That ended up being my entry into this, and I got to thinking that, wow, I could do something with the leather, because the leather is amazingly beautiful. It's very soft, supple. Most of the pro ball players for the last 100 years have played with a bison leather glove because it doesn't need to be broken in. And so I thought I'd do something with the leather. Then I started learning about spinning. And I thought, wow, this is cool. You can take this hair and twist it into yarn. And I just kind of got addicted to that. And Dad asked me to build him a website. And so I started to learn more about the fiber so I could do that. And next thing I know, I'm down there, you know, every day from sun up to sundown playing with fiber. And then I guess around that time, Linda Courtright at Wild Fibers Magazine had contacted Dad because she'd heard that he was playing with bison fiber, and she wanted to do a story on it. She came down, did an interview, and took a bunch of pictures, but took a bunch of bison roving, out to Stitches West. This is right at 10 years ago. She calls after the Thursday night preview and says, get on a plane with everything you have. You're in business. So I hadn't told you this before or anything, but Stitches is truly the reason that we are where we are today, and was the beginning of it.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's wonderful to know, and thank you for credit you for telling me that story, because it was before my, I mean, I, as most of my listeners know, and you guys too, I came back into the business about 7.5 years ago, so there are things I missed, lots of things.
Yep. Yeah. It was just
well, and I've seen people react to your fibers really passionately. I'm going to get back to this. I'm going to move over to Teresa for just a minute because there's some stuff I want to talk about before we start talking about your business. And I know that you folks are very involved with the American Bison Association and helping to develop ways for bison ranchers to be successful, because it's hard to be successful. And it, you know, there was a long time where it was not possible to be successful. And so I'd love it, Teresa, if you could talk to us a little bit about the history of your involvement with the American Bison Association, as well as some initiatives and projects you've been involved in.
Well, the National Bison Association and the Texas Bison Association, we are members of. As far as the real involvement, that's going to go back to Cecil. He's the one that's been on boards, vice president, and different positions that he's held over the years. And so we've always been involved when there's a need. He's always come to us and says, hey, can we get this going? And we always try to pitch in and help with the association that way. The core of the association is an alliance like any other association that you have with the cattle or the cashmere goats or the mohair association and so forth. And it's just other ranchers working together through that. The ranchers are really the ones that are credited for saving the bison. And so this association that they have put together is how to benefit these ranchers at this point to actually start making more of a financial recovery with it as well. Ron's probably going to be able to chime in just a little bit better than I am on some of the association things that are going to be on it and the philosophy of all that. Go ahead.
Basically what we've done is kind of put together a organization through the National Bison Association to work with the byproducts, you know, to give the ranchers another income source. We've kind of initiated what's called a hide credit or hair credit, depending on how things are done. And we harvest three different ways. We work with the shed fiber, and when ranchers send us that, we send them a check directly or through the processing plants. At the end of each season, we'll send them a check for the hide credit and things like that to just kind of make it a little bit more profitable. It's been quite successful. The president of the National Bison Association, Dave Carter, is just a phenomenal, phenomenal guy, and he's worked very hard and brought bison meat from being a novelty into being a staple because of the health benefits and just the quality of the meat, and really made it viable as an alternative to beef or chicken or fish, even as far as, you know, lower cholesterol. It's non-allergenic. There's no known allergies to bison meat or fiber. There's just a lot of great things about the animal that he's been able to share, and our mission is to try and educate people as much as we can.
Well, I agree about that. You know, I'm from South Dakota, so, you know, I was a kid when I had my first buffalo burger or bison burger, and you know, fantastic, you know. And it is Tam Hashke from Hills of Hope just chimed in and she said, you know, it's awesome and so much healthier for you, you know. And I understand that a certain number of my listeners are vegetarians or vegans, and this is distasteful, but you know, this is no worse than the hamburgers we eat at McDonald's. So this is what we're going to deal with. But it's also slightly better. Yeah, it is actually. Yeah. So there's the philosophy that you're trying to use, which I think is a conservation thing, which is you're trying to use the entire bison. And you guys told me a great story about how you kept something because you didn't want to know what to do, and it actually came in very handy from an ecological standpoint. Can you tell that story?
Well, this is really Teresa who kind of spearheaded this. When BP had the oil spill in the Gulf, tell the story. You do better.
Well, at the time, we're de-herring, and our primary focus was just the down and not knowing what to do with all the rest of the coarse fibers. And so Cecil had a barn and a garage and a small little building just full of bales of fiber that was coming back, and we weren't sure what to do with it yet because we just haven't gone down that road of what we could do with it. Because a lot of the things that we get is it was no's. No, nobody's ever done that before with bison. No, you can't do this, you can't do that. And so we got a lot of no answers. So we just kept it there. And during the oil spill, the Gulf Coast had the British Petroleum oil spill, I guess, 6 years ago. I've lost track of time. But they were putting boomers out because the chemicals weren't actually absorbing and breaking down the oil like they were wanting to, and this massive oil spill is going on. So they started asking for natural fibers, in which we were contacted about, and we sent them all the fibers that we had in the garage and warehouse because we thought, great way to get rid of the stuff. And so it was a great way of soaking up the oil in the natural booms that they had. Now we've learned that we can do some other stuff with our byproduct of the horsehair hair.
And again,
that's still
it,
pretty
it
cool.
Using every bit.
Yeah, using every bit. Conservation. And, well, it's absolutely the way to do it. It's just the right way of approaching it. It shows respect for the animal.
Well, most definitely. There's actually... This Lakota Sioux just outside of Rapid City up there had a ceremony a number of years ago. The woman who really kind of pioneered the use of bison down is Judith McKenzie McEwen. And if there's any hand spinners out there, you probably know and love Miss Judith. She's just an amazing person. But she kind of pioneered the modern resurgence and use of these wild down fibers. But they had a ceremony for her a number of years ago because they were saying that even though the natives used as much of the animal as possible, the down, they just didn't have the technology to separate and use the down, and so a lot of it still went to waste. They'd stuff things with it. But because she had figured out how to separate and spin the fiber, now the circle was complete. And so knowing that the natives respect the use of the fiber is very important to us. And, again, we've learned a ton from Miss Judith. She's been absolutely phenomenal.
Well, again, kudos to you because this is the way that good business and good organization should operate. And I want to talk, we'll move on to your business here but I really want to talk about this particular campaign. Folks are involved in VoteBison.org, and I'd like to ask you to explain what that is and talk to Barbara Hooligans about it.
Well, VoteBison.org is a campaign where we're trying to get the bison elected as our national mammal. We currently do not have a national mammal. We do have a national bird. And what this is doing is just showing that the iconic bison is equal as a symbol for the United States, as equal as the bald eagle is. Then what the campaign is going to do is a grassroots campaign, and we're contacting the congressman to vote yes when the vote comes up. Part of this is to expand on the bison and what all the bison can do for us, what they have done in the past and what we can do with them in the future. So it won't be a protected animal as such as the eagle is, but it will become the national mammal. Help me out with this, Ron, as far as...
it's kind of celebrating the importance of the mammal to the United States, and it is... It's just one of the things that's very important to this country. There's so many things that it's done from maintaining our grasslands. I mean, bison are responsible for actually spreading the native prairie grasses around the country, things that don't naturally reseed themselves. The bison carry the seeds, and when they wallow in the ground, will spread seeds. All of our ground birds have relied on the blowing bison down around the plains for their nesting materials. It's very important to our ecosystem and our culture. And, we did a good job of trying to wipe them out, but because of the ranchers and the conservation and preservation efforts that we've had, we've done a pretty good job of bringing them back. And, I've always said if they'd actually come up with some good bald eagle recipes, we'd have them flying everywhere. You'd have people ranching them.
That's pretty funny. Okay, well, thank you for sharing this with us, because, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know until we started talking. But let's move on and talk about the Buffalo Wool Company and the company itself, not just your involvement with this. It's been 10 years now, and the company has changed quite a bit. In the fiber arts world, you're, of course, well-known for your beautiful yarns. Let's start talking with the listeners about your yarn first. And should we start off with talking about sexy?
Okay, well, quick little history. We started as Buffalo Gold, and yeah. That was basically me and my father, and we were making brown yarn. Didn't do much blending, didn't do a lot of, I think we had two or three patterns, and it was very basic. Well, when we started, when things kind of picked up and we were developing a lot of our ready-to-wear, Teresa actually said, hey, what about the knitters? This is how you got started. This is what built you. Let's take the bison from being a novelty into being, you know, just a general fiber animal. So in order to compete in the knitting world, you've got to have color, which, you know, people like color, and you have to have designs. So about, well, I guess we're right at almost 3 years now that since Teresa has joined us, and she actually founded the Buffalo Wool Company, dedicated to doing the best quality bison yarn for hand knitting. Our first real yarn, that we developed was Sexy. It's a blend of bison and silk. Silk gives it the sheen and a little additional strength, but it also helps it take the dye better. It just helps you, instead of having just the brown yarn, the dark brown of the bison down to over dye, lightening it up with the silk helps it take color better. It's been wildly successful. I've kind of been amazed every day at the things that I've seen made with it. You want to talk a little bit about Sexy, dear?
Well, we can. Why don't we, for the listeners who don't know, Ron, and you talk a bit more about the staple of the fiber and what makes the fiber what it is and why it's so different than, say, wool or alpaca. And I do this because you're my yarn maker.
Okay, well, bison fiber is it's got the crimp of fine merino. It's a very fine, very crimpy fiber. And it's a solid, coarse, smooth protein. So it doesn't shrink and it doesn't felt and it's not limp and it doesn't slide like alpaca. It's got a good spring and memory to it. But it, so when you, of course, when you get technical and then add things to it, you look for things that are going to complement that and not detract from the properties. And we're very careful in selecting fibers that work well with it, because you can make some horrible mistakes if you use things that are the wrong length that don't complement the crimp. And there's a challenge in actually making the yarn, but bison is a fairly short staple fiber, so things tend to be quite fine. We don't do a lot of chunky heavyweight yarns. I guess Earth or Skies are the heaviest right now because, also the biggest factor in making the heavier weight yarns is the cost. Bison is extremely expensive. Off of one 2,000-pound animal, you actually get about 4 ounces of down. Of the pure down. So it's a, we try and make it go as far as possible and then bring the cost down to where it's slightly reasonable. Adding the silk, or in the case of Lux where we added cashmere and things like that, it just makes it a little bit more accessible to people.
Well, and it is gorgeous yarn. But please go ahead, Teresa.
Well, I was just going to give the listeners a comparison. So if you've got a 2,000-pound bison, is it equivalent to a cashmere goat and versus a sheep, and how much poundage you'd get off of a sheep? Do you have that, Ron?
Yeah, well, like I said, often, you know, sheep you get 15 to 20 pounds of wool, and so when you break it down, you get a lot. And off the bison, it's not much. You actually get more cashmere off of one, you know, 80-pound goat than you do off of a buffalo. So again, you got to be careful with it. You know, it not being careful with the fiber, because the fiber is incredibly durable. It's almost, you know, we call it bulletproof. But please don't use it to try and stop bullets.
we have proven that does not work.
Well, I want to say again that it is, really is beautiful stuff, and I know you guys started early on with just the natural look and eventually got into dyeing it, and I want to talk about the dyeing thing. Who I'd like you to tell our listeners who chooses the colors.
Well, there's two ways that that happens. The first is when we started, we didn't know how to dye yarn. You know, we were pretty clueless in that regard, and very, very blessed that this industry has a lot of absolutely wonderful people, namely people like Beth Casey at Lorna's Laces, who's just a phenomenal person and has just finished a special edition run for us that I guess we're talking about in the chat room, the Annie Oakley and the Calamity Jane. Beth was one of the first people to do some dyeing on the yarns, and she did a series for us called the Conservation Colorways, where she interpreted some pictures of the five conservation ranches, the foundation ranches, and interpreted those images into yarn, into colors in the yarn, and that was just spectacularly successful. The Calgary colorways are brand new. When it comes to using the guest dyers, we let the we don't tell them what to do. We let the artist be the artist. We've also worked with Amy at Madeline Tosh, and she's did a series for us. And recently with Tayu Landra, the owner and dyer at Kwikyu, and she's just done some spectacular stuff. That, you know, that's what they do. Let the people who know color and things like that do it. But at some point we decided that we kind of wanted to play, and that's where Teresa comes in and starts up, well, you know, we can start to dye our own yarn. So being a guy and not knowing colors, Teresa chooses what we do, how we do it, and the colors that are pretty. And how do you choose those, dear?
Well, you go back to what the Pantone forecast is. You look to see what your fibers will do with the colorways and different blends. And I dye what I wear, so I stick to the colors that I like best.
Well, you have good taste, obviously some relationships that you have notwithstanding, Teresa. So I'm sure that, that your sensibilities. I don't know what you're talking about, Ron. I do not know what your issue is with what I just said, Anyway, so I know you guys are really passionate about this, and I know that you're really genuine about this. What's it like when you see your yarn in designs that they're out there and people are designing with it and they show up and they're wearing sweaters and other garments in your yarn? I mean, what's that like for you?
It's inspiring.
It's awesome. Going to a show or somebody posting a picture and seeing a garment that where they've taken something that you've made and they've just made it more beautiful. And we've been so blessed on working with designers and the people that have made things from it's spectacular because, I know a lot of people see you at shows and see, the fun side of things. But for every, minute at the show, there's hours of work behind the scenes, whether it's scouring fiber, skirting fiber, washing, whatever. There's tons of work behind it. And when you see something that somebody's made something beautiful, it makes every minute of it worthwhile.
I find daily inspiration from it.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure you got a chance to jump in there, too, because it's something you said to me. The yarn business is only one component of your business. You also have a robust, ready-to-wear business. I have some personal experience with this. My wife, Krista, has a pair of your gloves that you gave her at Stitches Midwest in August. She won't let anybody touch them. She's afraid they'll steal them. She keeps them in her pockets. She sticks her hands in her pockets just to feel them, not to put them on, just to feel them. And she just looks at us and says, they make me happy. And she doesn't want to talk about it. They're wonderful. Will you talk about your ready-to-wear business? Because it's a big component of your business.
Well, about three-quarters of the fiber that we process now goes into the ready-to-wear stuff, and a large component of that's the gloves and socks. Bison fiber is extremely warm. The only thing really warmer is Kivia, the muskox fiber. But the one advantage Bison has is its durability. Socks and gloves, you throw them in the washer, throw them in the dryer, doesn't shrink, doesn't felt. It's extremely lightweight. You know, an individual glove weighs just at an ounce and a quarter on a large glove. So, but it'll keep you warm, supposedly down to negative 20. Not that I've ever seen negative 20, and I don't plan to, but, you know, it's very lightweight, it's soft, it's comfortable, and you can still do things in them. They're not big, bulky, and heavy. Fishermen seem to really have been our first glove customers because you can dip your hand in a river, grab a fish, give it a shake, and it'll keep you warm even if the glove is wet. It'll lick the moisture off your skin, keep you dry. So because of this side of it, we also attend a lot of hunting and fishing shows, which makes for an interesting mix, you know, going between sheep and wool festivals and yarn shows, you know, to a safari club show or something like that. It makes for an interesting mix of customers.
There's a great story that you talked about in that, and I was going to talk about it a little later, but at all these shows that you're going with the ready-wear stuff, you always bring a little yarn. And you told me something interesting about that.
You can't not bring yarn. And it's amazing that, you know, we can be at like I said, the Eastern Sportsman Show or a big hunting show, and people can sniff it out. They'll come up and say, all right, where's your yarn? And it's amazing.
In which we happily bring out this big basket of all this yarn, and they start pawing at it.
I just think that's amazing. So there you are at a show that no other yarn is at, and you've got a box of or a big basket of yarn under the table. You've got no signage up, and bang, you know, they're at you for the yarn. So you think they can smell it? Is that what you think, Teresa?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And okay. I love being at the hunting shows where the guys come up and they're wanting the yarn to go home and knit with. That's the cool part. So they're kind of pulling through it, and I'm like, all right, well, I'll take this. And my grandmother will knit this. She taught me to knit, but she'll knit this for me. But, yeah, it's always fun to see the guys doing it too.
Most definitely. I found, you know, pretty much any guy in the Navy, or especially submariners, they all knit. And they're a very underserved part of our population.
Okay, well, I agree. Let's make sure that we kind of do an overview about everything. Well, not everything, but can you give us a range of the other products that the Buffalo Wool Company offers?
Well, obviously we started with the hand knitting yarns, but going down, using every part of the animal, we've started making light felt hats. Those have become quite popular. Made it by Bailey Hat Company up in Adamstown, Pennsylvania. And they use some of the coarser fiber to felt into hats. We make insoles with probably the coarsest of the fiber. They're made in Maine at U.S. Felt. And they've been one of I think they're one of my favorite products because they work so well. We wear them in the summer. We wear them in the winter. They keep any temperature, whether it's, you know, hot concrete or walking on ice, they keep any temperature from going through the sole of your shoe or boot. They wick moisture like crazy. We developed a whole line of fly tying fiber. That was an interesting one. Fly fishermen love Bison because it floats forever. It can be made into any number of colors. It's got sort of that natural flow to it that when you're making, you know, when you're tying bugs, it seems to work really well. You make wings and antenna and things. Works great for dubbing fiber. What else do we make here?
Well, they're fishing from salmon fishing, steelhead fishing, bone fishing now. We keep getting emails about different fishing styles that they're doing. I think the most recent one we got was from, was it Poland? With the gentleman over there fishing? Yeah. So it's just cool to see what else they can do with the fiber. It's the opposite spectrum of the knitting world. So where we have magazines showing us how to knit a sweater or a pair of gloves, we've got the gentleman over here doing the fly fishing and making buggers to all forms of for the fly fishing and showing how to use it because they have a special bug for this special fish in this region at this time to catch that fish. So it's fascinating to see what all they can do with this as well.
And it's funny, they have patterns just like, almost like knitting or crochet patterns. They have patterns for bugs. Honestly, we like working with anybody who wants to make something. So as far as what we're all making at any given time, honestly, I don't even know.
my favorite thing about the fly fishing material is the coarse hair that we use from the carding waste, but it's the last two sections of the fiber that we weren't able to use before, which is the front chap hairs, and then the coarse section that's on the base of the skull that goes along the spine that is very, very coarse. And that's usually what everybody thinks bison feels like over its entire body is that one section there. So we've now taken two more sections of the bison's hair and been able to utilize it in the fly tying fibers.
Oh, that's great. Now, I know that Made in America is a big theme for you folks, and I'd like to ask you to just express yourself about that a little bit.
Well, obviously, bison is an American icon, and we want our children to have jobs. So much these days comes in from China, from Turkey, from you know, there's so many yarns that are spun in all over. But the American textiles American textile tradition is how this country was founded. We've had, you know, from the cotton mills in South Carolina up to the woolen mills in Massachusetts, Maine. It's very important. And when we first started trying to find people who would spin the fiber, you'd call a mill and they'd say, we closed last week, or, you know, we're closing down next week. We can't process your stuff. You start to realize that the tradition and history that we're losing in this country. There was a company in Massachusetts called Forte Cashmere that had been here since the 1800s, and they had shut down and sent all their equipment to China. And that's something that we're losing, not only the equipment and the business, but the knowledge. And so it's kind of become our mission to do what we can to save the American textile worker. In Texas, there's a lot of, you know, from the mohair goats and cotton and sheep, there's a lot of people who rely on this industry. And if we can do a little bit and give a mill some business, then we're going to do our best to keep it here. You know, sometimes it definitely costs more to process, but it's well worth it. You know, we know the names of the people who are spinning the fiber. We know the guy who's felting the hats. We've sat there in the mill when they're making the gloves. It's very personal, and we want to keep it that way.
Did you want to add anything, Teresa?
No, I think you said it well.
I think so too. I just thought I heard maybe something in the background there. So let's back off and talk about our personal history, Ron and Teresa. I know you both mostly through social media and through Stitches, and it's through Stitches that I've really become a pretty big fan of both of yours, beyond all the wonderful stuff you do. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Excuse me. You both are unbelievably gracious and thoughtful. I'm going to say it and put you on the spot. My whole crew looks forward to seeing you at the shows. And you've had a real impact on them. So here's my question, because I know you know it, and I definitely know it. Doing shows can be incredibly stressful. How do you always manage to stay positive all the time?
Yeah, good question. It's people like you and I mean, your crew, honestly, they're just awesome. And, you know, I know we deal with Christy the most, and we absolutely love her. And it shows, you know, when you're working with people like that, it's wonderful, and it makes going to the show such a joy. They are, you know, when they're so friendly and helpful, and every answer is yes. That makes a difference. It makes it easy for us to go in and have fun. You know, whether it's at, like I said, the NRA show or Stitches East or West or wherever. And then the customers, that's the other thing that makes it easy to be happy. The people that we get to work with, our fans, our friends, and things like that, they make every day worth getting up and going to work, and, you know, they make it fun. So it makes it easy to be up and happy all the time.
Well, I just want to interject really quickly that, you know, I think it's very, very gracious of you to give a shout-out to our crew, Christy and Mavis and Molly and Lisa and Jason.
Oh.
They are great. I mean, they are fantastic.
They're absolutely wonderful. Every one of them is just awesome.
Yeah. And I didn't name them all, and I'm sorry about that, but they are pretty great. But and I've also seen you at other shows, like I've seen you at TNNA, and I've seen you – I think what you have is kind of infectious. I've seen you give help to what some people consider your competitors and take help from what some people would consider your competitors. You know, ours is not a cutthroat industry, but still, I think you both tend to bring out the best in people when you're around them and you try to keep the fun and the enthusiasm there. And – you know, this might be, you know, kind of a good time to talk about your philosophy of interacting with different people in our industry.
Well, we have been very blessed. There have been so many people that have helped us along the way. Again, you know, we came into this not knowing the first thing. And now, you know, we'll go to the Bison conferences and speak on byproducts. And it's so funny. People come up to you now at a wool show and ask where to get yarn spun or how to do this. And you realize, oh, my God, I actually know something. And then you think about where you learned it and the people that helped you along the way. I can't thank – I mean, there are so many people to thank about, you know, who've helped us and taught us, that all you can do is try and pay it forward and help the person behind you. And that's kind of our basic philosophy. You know, if I – it would take me, you know, the entire show to list all the people that have – shown us how to do what we can and, you know, how to make our products better. And in return, we will do whatever we can to pay it forward. So when you've got an attitude like that, yeah, you're going to be up and happy and friendly because it's fun. You wake up every day not knowing what the next thing is going to be or the next product, the next colorway or the next design. But when you get to work with great people, it makes it a pleasure.
Oh, Gary, did you have a – go ahead, please, Ron.
I was going to say, Teresa, got anything to add to that?
That's
truly
what I was going
to
ask.
How I feel.
Yeah, I know I step on your toe there. It's the creativity in this industry, and when we all look at it together as far as grooming that knitter, because the knitters that are new coming on, the knitters that are coming back into it, or just the crafters that are crossing over – you have to stay positive in order to keep the industry positive and keep people coming back in.
And that's a really good point, because you're talking about people who should be your competitors. People like Jeannie at Fiesta Yarns. One of my, you know, she's awesome. Taiyu at Koigu. And just Carl at Bijou Basin. All these people who we're all selling yarn. So, yeah, we're sort of competing for the same dollar at a show. But everyone that's doing it right understands that while I may not sell yarn to you today, if we bring in a new knitter and if we all work together and get somebody learning and enjoying and having fun with it, they might come back to me tomorrow or the next day. So in the meantime, the better we can make the industry, the better we all are. So that seems to be the pervasive attitude through the industry, or at least what we see.
Well, I think you're right, and you know, you're somebody that does a lot more shows than I do, because you know I do probably 6-7 shows a year for Stitches, 2 TNNAs, and then I end up somewhere at something for that. You do a lot of different shows, and you run into the same people all the time, and so there's just a natural progression of cooperation. But I want to bring up one guy in particular, because you like to have fun at his expense, and let's talk about our friend Colonel Coop.
Dad, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
All right, I got to bring this one up. We were at SAF in North Carolina here a couple of weeks ago, and somebody went up to him and said,
"Was it SAF or Taos? I think it was Taos."
Oh, it was. I'm sorry, it was at Taos. Yeah,
it was Taos.
You do a few shows. Do so many shows. Well, Dad is actually the president of the Dallas Bowl Festival, and people know that my father is there and such, but somebody went up to Carl and said, "So, you're Ron's father." And I've never seen anyone get set on edge so quickly. And we've always had fun together. You know, he's because we both have big brown animals. I mean, and ours is there's a lot of similarities between us. We've been friends for a long time. People get us confused frequently. So for somebody to call in my father, I thought was really hysterical, and we've been teasing him about that for a while now. So next time sees Carl, just take him a box of Just for Men, you know, help him get that gray out of the beard.
Oh, Carl, he's so funny. I was telling you guys on the pre-interview that I took I went out to dinner with Carl and Eileen and Marley one night with Molly at a TNNA, and the next morning I had to call Molly because my ribs hurt. I was laughing so hard. I mean, the guy is a funny guy. But you're right. People do confuse you guys. And I think once I even misspoke and you said, okay, one is yak and one is bison. Get it straight, you know. And you even did a graphic up for it. I love it when you tease. I love the whole. Let's talk about that next. Your social media presence is also very positive, and yet it's a real funny thing. I get a real kick out of your posts and your Photoshop work. And seriously, your posts are always so thoughtful, and they're both a lot of fun. So you're a little dangerous with Photoshop, Ron.
Well, first of all, because I'm not very good, but I have fun with it. We have... Probably, I can't say tell you how awesome our Facebook fans, friends, family are. They feed it. So, you know, when you post something funny and people like it, it makes you want to post something funnier next time. And the Photoshop things are one way I can try and be funny. And so, because for some reason, images always seem to paint better than words. You do what you can and try and have a little fun. Then there's people like Jerome Barsky start things.
Yeah. Yeah, he starts things, but then you finished it. I mean, I saw that most recent thing that you and Franklin and I all became a variation of the crochet dude. I think I was the croc dude because bunny slippers don't wear well or something like that. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that I'd want to live in your mind, but maybe a tour someday would be kind of an interesting thing.
I don't think you got to see the poster last year that Ron made of you in the Hunger Games when we had that competition going, trying to, I think
it
had for
the Halo.
Yarn,
and
I think we got so busy at the show that we never brought the poster out. So you didn't actually get to see the good-sized poster Ron made with you having the blue hair as a narrator from the Hunger Games. We'll have to bring
that
to the
awesome.
Next show.
Oh, that please do that because that was fun. you guys and Jeannie and Amy, you know, got into it. There was some trash talk. There were some challenges. It was great.
It was a lot of fun.
It was funny. It actually started when I guess Brown Sheep Yarns up in Nebraska, who are also wonderful people and do some dyeing for our ready to wear goods. They were trying to increase their Facebook presence. And raise their number of fans up to like 3,000 or something. And at the time we were, you know, I think we had 1,000 or whatnot. And so I started trash talking and trying to challenge them to, you know, the first to 3,000 wins. I don't think they actually ever saw it or noticed. And of course they blew way past, you know, they were just on fire. They're huge and very popular. And then I guess Jeannie chimed in saying, you know, she was going to challenge us and she had fewer than us at the time. And of course I think this way surpassed us since, but it was just a lot of fun, and you know, we made a game of it and ended up, I think, raising some money and doing some good for Halos of Hope.
I actually think, wasn't it Project Linus that we worked on for that one?
I don't remember, honestly.
Yeah, I think it was Project Linus that we got into for that one. I think we weren't quite involved, because that was like 2 years ago, but it was a lot of fun.
I think you're right, actually. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, man. I think Yeah, no problem. It was Project. Yeah, Jeannie just confirmed in the chat room that it was Project Linus. But you guys both contributed stuff. Some Project Linus, we got involved and made sure they had a presence at Stitches. It was just a lot of fun, and it was good natured. I mean, you know, Jeannie's Texas born as well. You Texans seem to get each other. Now I want to ask Teresa something really quickly here. I know that you both go online and post. It's the way that you kind of split the day up as far as making sure you're both getting work done and posting. I'm somewhat aware that Ron gets blamed for some of the posts that you make. Is that not correct, Teresa?
I don't know if it's blamed, but yeah, he takes credit for quite a bit of them. The funny ones, I never put on there that it's Ron posting, maybe I should because he's always posting, well, T wanted this or T's done this, but no, I love to post things and then just kind of walk away and go back to my job, and then later he comes in going, what did you post?
You know, I don't actually. She posts all of the really bad stuff, all the things that are just, you know, really
okay.
Over the line.
Yeah. Here we go.
It is not me.
Here we go. Everybody in the chat room, please raise your left hand. Oh, look, nobody can raise their left hand there in the chat room. All right. Well, so let's move on.
Of all.
Yep. I want to talk about something in particular because, you know, one small business owner to another. I want to talk about how much you do for other people. Every time I turn around, you are quietly giving away yarn to other people who need it for different charities or just to be good guys. And we're talking about a lot of yarn, regardless of what people may think. And, you know, I know the price point on a skein of sexy is not a cheap thing. You're not living in a mansion in Texas, and the amount of yarn you give away is really inspiring. I mean, even when you were on hosting the show with Drew, you basically threw it out there to every fiber hooligan, if you need yarn, get a hold of me. You know, you guys are that way. It's got to cut into your bottom line, and I know you guys are good business people, but you do it, and I think it's amazing, and I'd like you to talk about it, because there's obvious a philosophy that says, yeah, we're going to be giving away yarn.
Well, it's something we've done. There's one of the things in the industry is that there's so many people who are so inspiring of what they do to help the world. We look at, you know, what little bit we can do. You know, you talk about us not living in a mansion. Our truck is out in front of the house, and it basically can block the entire house, which is nice because we're not here very often. But, no, it's just you look at what you can do, and yarn is what we have. And if you can do something where it can be put to some good, do it.
It's having belief and paying it forward. I don't know the impact that it would have by me giving it to somebody, but if I give it to someone for Project Linus, and all of a sudden you come back with these stories that, oh, that's why my child got that blanket when we were in the hospital. And then you start hearing positive things. It's doing unconditional gifting with the belief that it will pay it forward in more ways than you'll ever know, and you don't want to know. That's just part of that philosophy of unconditional giving. And you know, we like eating rice and beans here in Texas, so we're okay with that.
I will tell you, we don't budget the giving or the gift yarn. You do it as per need. Well, growing up here, I went to school with a guy who's a number of years younger than me, but his name was Blake Mikoski, and I don't know, 20 years ago, he started a company called Tom's Shoes with philosophy of make a pair and give a pair. And that's just always really struck a chord. Seeing somebody whose business model is about doing good, that really stuck
that's
with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, I'd like you to, you know, you've obviously supported a number of charities, and I'd like to talk to you about your involvement with one in particular, Elephants Remember Joplin. And I want to preface this by telling people a little bit about Elephants Remember Joplin. This is C.C. Creech and her mother, Belinda, who are both dear friends of mine. They started a charity to give relief when the tornado went through Joplin. We've talked about him before, and Belinda's been on the show before. These are very good friends of mine. I consider Belinda to be like a little sister to me. And Cece writes me every couple of weeks wonderful little letters with little gifts and art attached to it, and always addresses it to Uncle Benjamin. And they're great people. They're people that don't have a lot of money, but they do good stuff. Can you tell me how you got hooked up with these folks and what you're doing with the Elephants Remember Joplin folks?
Well, the truth is we got hooked up with them through Stitches. You know, big surprise there. That's how we've met most of the people we know, or a lot of them. But Belinda and Cece are both just absolutely phenomenal. And the truth is we have I would like to start doing more. We have not done anywhere near enough with them. I think they've got a great vision and a great mission. And I really want to see if we can take it to the next level. And I've got to focus myself a little bit more on working on that. I think Belinda has done an amazing, amazing job doing what she can, and I'd really like to help. So, you know, talking about what we've done, we haven't, you know, we just are a little part of anything. But I think it's a wonderful idea, and the things that she has done for, A, starting with Joplin and B, moving up to the East Coast when the hurricane hit, you know, the New York, New Jersey area and supporting there, and now with the typhoon in the Philippines. And, you know, I can't take any credit or anything for helping them yet. It's in the works, and we'd like to, but they're just
You know,
people.
I mean, I've talked to Belinda, and she would say that you've helped quite a bit, and you know, I know you either have or are joining the board for their organization, which is fantastic. I think you're a perfect choice.
I am.
Can you talk about maybe what the charity is going to be working on or what they're working on right now?
There's a couple of things that we're actually really not allowed to talk about yet because we're working with some celebrities agents and things like that. So there's some big plans coming. I don't want to – I really don't know what I can spill the beans on. And all on yet or not, but now that they're working on their 503 charitable organization status, things are actually going to be able to start really happening and really start getting it moving. So that's what's
okay.
Yeah,
that's great.
I will let you
talk.
I can't yet.
Yeah, no problem, no problem. I see that Belinda's in the chat room a little bit, and she's waving at you virtually, I think. So let's move on from that, and I want to talk about your truck, because your truck is cool, and it's become kind of a social media sensation, and it's a good story. So for fiber hooligans who may have missed about your truck, let's go through the story. And T, I'd like to have your take on it first, if I could.
Well, first, before she gets started, I do want you to know that she does have a name. Okay, so instead of calling it the truck, we can call her Miss Betsy.
Miss Betsy.
The truck.
Miss okay. Betsy. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, when you're on the road a lot, you daydream about having the perfect vehicle that can carry all your inventory and be your road show and your have a coffee maker and a printer on board and, you know, just a perfect vehicle as you're on the road so much. And so we've been daydreaming about this for quite a while and trying to pull something together. And recently sold the RV, knowing that we wanted to do the transformation on this. So we started looking at vehicles and trying to fine-tune what vehicle we really wanted to get. So... And this is usually a morning discussion as we come and go with a cup of coffee and walk by each other. And next thing I know is one morning I'm walking by and Ron says, well, I think I got the truck. And I said, well, that's great. Where is it? We'll go look at it. And he says, nope, I already got it. Come to find out he's been on eBay and he purchased it on eBay. So from there we went, okay, I have a truck that's 3 states away from me, which is a full day drive to get to go see what this truck is. What are we going to do? Well, because remind you, Ron, that, you know, I'm leaving in 12 hours for my next event. So what are we going to do about this vehicle? So he starts looking and researching into it and came up with a crowdfunding, because this is in the middle of our camera production line. So I had to ignore that. And so Ron got into the crowdfunding and got that started for our vehicle. We got the vehicle here. Ron can kind of chime in a little bit more about his eBay shenanigans.
Yes, we did promise shenanigans, so here it was. I was online and found the vehicle. And at the moment, I think we had $12 or something in the bank. So it was like, all right, this is exactly what we need, but, you know, we're in the middle of production. We want it. We can't afford it. So we started a crowdfunding through GoFundMe and put up a few sponsorship levels and basically asked our fans and friends to help. And then the response started pouring in.
It was overwhelming, the response that we had. It really was. When you want to stop and look at the blessings and when you can get your blessings back, the crowdfunding was that.
We raised enough to purchase a truck in like 3.5-4 days. So many people just stepped up in so many different ways to help. It was truly amazing. So, yeah, I was able to go ahead and finalize the purchase of the truck and get it delivered down here. And so for the last 2 months or so, we've been kind of slowly working on it as time and money permit, redoing the suspension and tires and pulling all the bread racks out of the back of it, getting it wrapped. And I'm actually installing the carpet today. This is what I was doing this morning, and putting in a radio because, you know, it's 20 hours on the road in dead silence gets old. So, yeah, and we actually pull out in it here in about 2.5 hours. I think we're leaving for the next thing.
Right, right. And I understand eventually you're going to have a small dye studio in the truck?
Oh, yeah. No, the whole goal of the truck is to be able to have a mobile shop where people can actually come in and we'll have cabinets and display stuff where they can actually come in and shop. But the mobile dye studio, we really like to be able to go to a guild or a shop and set up on site and dye yarn in front of people.
Well,
that would be a lot of fun. It'll be fun. I mean, again, it's just one more of those things that you enjoy because we do everything in such small batches, and we don't ever dye 100 skeins at a time. We'll dye 20 or 10. we can do custom work for people, and I think that'll be fun.
So you just stated that you're heading off for a show in D.C. It's got to be a 24-hour drive. And you told me, how long is this show that you're doing?
I think we're there, 19 days or something, dear?
I think right at 20, yeah. We open the day after Thanksgiving through the 18th of December.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like a stress test, but...
And this is a fun one. This is a holiday gift show that we're doing outside of the Smithsonian downtown D.C. So we meet all kinds of amazing people and just have a great time in D.C. This is where we're selling all of our ready-wear.
Well, you'll sell some yarn there too, right?
Oh, yeah. No, the D.C. market is wonderful.
Okay. Well, it's good. Well, speaking of shows, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Dallas-Fort Worth Fiber Festival because that's something that you guys have been involved with. And I think you, Teresa, probably are right now more involved with this. So will you tell our listeners about the show, its history, and kind of what's going on about this show?
I'd love to. DFW Fiber Fest is a very small festival that got started about 8, 9, 10 years ago. And we've slowly grown. Now we're moving this year into the Irving Convention Center so we can all now kind of have a more elbow room, actually get a double booth and so forth. It's a small local festival. Not a lot of big yarn companies come to it. Madeline Tosh comes. She's local here. Galina Godiva, I don't know if I mispronounced her last name, comes to the show and brings her wares. It's just a fun, great local fiber event that takes place the last weekend of March, first weekend of April. It depends on how the Easter falls during that time frame. It's a small growing show. But what they do is we bring in, the board brings in some amazing hosts. I know we've had Franklin Habit. This year we're having Stephanie Pearl McPhee come in. And we bring in our teachers. And from everything I've heard from Shannon Mollett-Bowlesby to Frank Bento, everyone else, is just the way everyone is treated. They just love coming to Dallas-Fort Worth because they're picked up from the airport, brought into the hotels, brought up for dinner. We just show them a really great time. We hopefully we're showing them the best of Texas and what we've got here to offer for the knitters.
We're very blessed. They've got a great board to organize this because we didn't have any event here locally. And they've decided, you know, they've kind of taken the Stitches playbook and decided take care of the people, whether it be the customers, the vendors, or the teachers. You know, make it about the people. And that philosophy's really seemed to work for them. The board just does an amazing job.
They do.
What? I can tell they do because there's some teachers that we share, and most notably the one I've spoken to the most about the show was Gwen Borkner, who was there, and you know she couldn't say enough good things about it. And as you and I both
awesome
know,
in general.
Gwen is so difficult to deal with that you don't often hear.
She's a real pain in the ass. I know.
I mean,
keep having her back.
That whole sweetness and talent thing, I think, is an act, don't you?
Completely.
Yeah,
completely.
I think so too. Anyway, so you guys are doing a good job. I hope to actually get down to that show eventually because I've heard nothing but good things about it. And, you know, for anybody that wants to find out more about that, it's dfwfiberfest.org. You can jump online and take a look at that, or you can check into our groups at the end of the show. When this is off, and we'll post some links as well. We can't forget to talk about your book that you folks are working on. It's very exciting. And so how's it going? Please tell our listeners what it's about. And then finally, when do you think it might be published?
Well, I think it's going to come out October 15th. Not saying which October 15th. Kind of like, you know. No, it is going to roll out faster than Obamacare. I will tell you that. But, we are so excited about this. We're working with a number of awesome designers. One in particular has got the majority of the book. Her name is Lynette Meek. She's from Vancouver, British Columbia. Or actually, she's from Nanaimo Island, I'm sorry. And she's amazing. I posted a little while in the chat room the link to the photo shoot from this weekend. We've been very blessed, like I said. We've seen a lot of spectacular designs. But Lynette has truly taken it to the next level. The stuff she's done has been amazing. The Yippee-Ki-Yay cowl was the first piece she did in our yarns. And it was actually, we did a contest. We made a yarn called Buffalo Gold with, you know, we spun pure bison with real gold. And I did a design contest. And Lynette sent in, you know, just a note saying, well, this is what I'd do. And in 20 words, she captured the spirit of the yarn, the design, I mean, everything perfectly. So we got all excited, started looking at some of her portfolio, and decided this woman is just so off the charts amazing. It's unreal. And we got to talking, and she wanted to play with some more of the yarns. And, you know, first thing you do is you pack up a big box and say, here, play. And she came back with seven just outstanding designs that are kind of going to be the foundation of the book. The book is called Cowgirl Up. It's a collection of designs inspired by the women of the Wild West. And truthfully, it should, like I said, she had the last photo shoot this weekend. There's going to be a really cool story in there by this a knitter out of New Mexico named Jean Ellerts that's amazing. And we've got, our buffalo chili recipe in there.
Gotcha. So can I ask you a real quick question because you brought it up just a minute. So you decided to take your yarn and spin it with gold. Mm-hmm. Okay. You were thinking to yourself, you know, you looked at Teresa one day and you said, you know, I don't think our yarn is expensive enough. That's what you decided. Right?
Well, my mouth has gotten me into more than a little trouble over the years. You know, not long ago I popped off about a radio, you know, a podcast and said, you know, hey, why don't you let – so – yeah, every once in a while you say something silly, and then you have to live up to it. And I am, as often as I say stupid things, I do try and at least make them true. There's I know you know Jamad at Zelana Yarns.
Yeah.
And wonderful guy, and they make the New Zealand possum yarn, beautiful stuff. he was talking once about spinning the most expensive yarn in the world, and he blended possum, kiviat, cashmere, bison, and silk. Made about 12 skeins of this really amazing yarn. And then he comes back and spins yarn with crushed pearls. Everyone's seen Zilana's pearl yarn. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Well, you know, sitting in the bar one night, I said, you want to see an expensive yarn? I'll show you an expensive yarn. And, so going back to the original name that we had that was given to us by Linda Courtright about Buffalo Gold, everyone's always joked that bison is as expensive as gold. Well, we're not quite $1,400 an ounce. Close, but not quite. So there you go. I think I found a company that makes, it actually spun some 18-karat gold plied around silk, and I bought several ounces, and we have a little local mill here in Texas, and I don't know how many hours we spent trying to figure out the twist and the proper way to ply it, and we made 100 skeins of yarn plied with gold.
That is just so cool. I can't wait to see it. So are there any shout-outs you'd like to give to anyone or reminders of anything else you're working on?
Well, do you want to field that one?
No, I just want to follow up with votebison.org. Go check it out so everyone can really see what this is about, and to contact your local congressman to vote yes when the vote comes up. We did get it voted as a National Bison Day this last November. And so that is now passed, and we'll have that every year. But definitely want to work on this votebison.org program.
Well, that's great, Teresa, and I appreciate that. And no, go ahead, Ron, please.
All right, I just want to thank you for having us here. This has been exciting.
Absolutely.
We've been a fan for a long time.
It's my pleasure. I'm gonna do this because I warned you, and I know, Teresa, you may have just given your closing remark, but before we wrap this up, is there anything, a final message you'd like to share with our listeners? And, Teresa, if you've done yours, that's fine. Ron, we'll go with you.
All right, well, because this knitting industry and crochet is our passion and not something that any of us have to do, we do it because we enjoy it, and it brings us happiness. All I can say is just spread the happiness. You know, show somebody how to pick up a pair of needles and make something. And when you can use your powers for good, use them for good. Like somebody once said, be good to one another. Easy enough.
Yeah, it is easy enough. All right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today, Ron and Teresa. I'll look forward to talking with you again very soon and seeing you at the upcoming shows.
Yeah, we'll see you. We'll see you.
I look forward to it, Dan.
Santa Clara.
Have a safe drive out to D.C. later today, okay?
Thank you. You take
Absolutely.
Care.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
That was Teresa and Ron Miskin from the Buffalo Wool Company. You can keep up with what they're doing at the Buffalo Wool Company, the Buffalo Wool Co. This week, we are going to continue our new segment from our roving virtual reporter to tell us the things that she's been seeing in the fiber arts world that she thinks we should know about. I'd like to welcome back to the show the moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group and the Fiber Hooligans Facebook group, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again this morning from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Happy Monday, Ben.
Happy Monday. So we're getting ready for Thanksgiving over here. Do you have big plans for this week?
With work and everything, just trying to take it a little easier and, let everybody do their thing, getting together with their family.
Yep, I sure do understand it. So what are we going to talk about today?
I think we're going to have to talk about Doctor Who.
Oh, my goodness. So we're going to change the name of this segment just for this show, and we'll call ourselves Fiber Whovians.
That's cool. Yes, let's do that.
Okay.
I think... I, you know, I have to admit I was kind of out of the loop. I actually thought the program Saturday was strictly going to be in the theaters, and, you know, I had been following the feeds and everything, and just as a fluke walked into my living room from the office and saw that it was actually on TV, so I got to watch it, and I remember thinking during the program that it's going to be pretty cool if people are working on their Doctor Who projects.
Oh, how did I not see that one coming at me? Okay. All right, so I want to back up here a little bit and make two qualifying points. The first is, for those of you who missed it, with the big 50th anniversary, the Doctor Who was on, and we won't talk about it too much, but it was wicked cool. The second thing is there was actually an appearance of one of the Doctor Who scarves. And the third thing is that I'm just about to get razzed by Tammy, I can tell, for the Doctor Who scarf that I started, 4 years ago and have never finished. So having said that, go ahead. Hit me with your best shot, Tammy.
Well, I think I have to uphold my responsibilities on the program or Christy would send me lynch notes. Did Benjamin Levesay work on his Doctor Who shawl scarf this weekend?
No, he did not. He watched, but he watched a lot of Doctor Who. They've had a marathon going on there. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, I really don't know that I'm going to finish it. I know Steve is like in my face, but anyway. But let's move off of me for a second, because you've got some great resources online that you want to share with people, right?
Yes. Well, you sent me the link before about this nitty little
wittylittleknitter.com.
Yeah, wittylittleknitter.com. And boy, she has really researched the scarf and shown all the different permutations with each season pretty much of the different colorways and everything. There's a ton of patterns on Ravelry. If you go in and search for Doctor Who, you're going to see a lot of people's individual products, because Doctor Who is actually a licensed name. The patterns aren't available under that name. But if you search for other things like Time Traveler, Bigger on the Inside, that was actually a shawl that showed up at the event in London and showed up on the Twitter feed over the weekend. Was somebody wearing that shawl? They didn't identify who the wearer was. But there's, you know, people aren't just sticking to the scarf. So when you get done, you can do your socks if you want, or your sweater or shawl. I'm sure Krista would like that nice blue shawl. You know, you got to get busy, Ben.
I know. Well, I'm working on it, but I appreciate that. So, I wanted to share that link real quick because I happen to have it on hand. It was WITTY, littleknitter.com. And if you're out there and a Doctor Who scarf fan, this is the resource for it. I tell you, it's fantastic. And TARDIS Terra runs that, and she's pretty awesome. But, yeah, well, that's great. This was definitely a big Doctor Who weekend. I no spoilers. I was going to talk about all the Doctors that were going to be in it, but I've got a few people that are in the chat room that haven't seen yet, so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
No spoilers. We won't do the spoilers.
No spoilers, but I was really impressed, and I'm not the aficionado that everybody else is. So I grew up in Star Trek world. So I've had a really difficult time struggling with the last, you know, trying to get into the Doctor Who for the last 2 years. I don't think I will ever get caught up on all the 50 years. But there is obviously, if you start looking at this, there is obviously a lot of people out there that are really very interested in that topic. Even Lorna's Laces came out with a new colorway just before this 50th anniversary, which I'm having a hard time finding. So I'm wondering if maybe it sold out, which would be great for whoever the retailer is, and for Lorna's Laces, because, you know, it's a beautiful colorway, even if it wasn't Doctor Who inspired.
Well, yeah, I think it actually is Doctor Who color inspired, as I recall. I remember seeing pictures of it. But yeah, if you start sniffing around into the knitting and crocheting world and you cross reference those with Doctor Who, or, you know, it's bigger on the inside, It's amazing how much. I think once, you know, I had Mary Beth, or sorry, Mary Heather from Ravelry on the show, and she said that there's, you know, 1,000 maybe groups, you know, or resources on the Ravelry site for Doctor Who. So it's amazing.
Yeah.
And
yes,
in the
is.
Show yesterday, there was not on one of the Doctors, but there was one of the Doctor Who stars from season 12.
Yes. Doing the happy dance to get to see it. So.
Yep. It was awesome. It was awesome. Well, that's great. You know, I appreciate you jumping in, and you had a great report today. I want to wish you happy Monday, and I'll look forward to hearing from you again next Monday.
Yes, have a great week. Happy Monday.
That was Tammy Burke, our new roving virtual Fiber Hooligan reporter and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on our groups. Tammy does a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide follow-up to anything you might ask on the show. Next Monday, and this is fun, next Monday, my guest will be one of my dear friends, Betsy Hirschberg. Betsy is an award-winning designer, teacher, and author of Betsy Beads, Confessions of a Left Brain Knitter, published by XRX Books. After more than 50 years of knitting, she is thrilled to have discovered a creative process that allows the left and right sides of her brain to play nicely together. She has yet to encounter a knitting project that cannot be enhanced by the judicious application of beads. She is a staple and a favorite at Stitches. Her Craftsy.com class, Brilliant Knit Beads, has allowed her to share her innovative techniques with thousands of students. Betsy has also recently launched her own e-commerce site, and since this show is airing on Cyber Monday, I encourage all of you folks to save a few of your online dollars, because I think you might find yourself infected with bead mania by the time this show is over, and I think we might be able to send you somewhere where you can fulfill those needs. So, looking forward to that show. Two more announcements I'd like to make before we wrap up the show today. First, I'd like to remind all of you that registration for classes and events at Stitches South 2014 opens tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Central, and we have a great show planned. Over half of the 124 classes we're offering are brand new, and these classes are being taught by 32 of the best instructors on the planet. And we are also so fortunate to have Amy Herzog with us as our opening day presenter. For those of you who'd like to know more about Amy, you can find out about the opening day presentation and Amy on the knittinguniverse.com website. And you can tune in to Fiber Hooligan on Monday, December 9th, when Amy will be my guest on the show. So I hope you'll join us for that edition of Fiber Hooligan, as well as for Stitches South in Atlanta, Georgia in April. Next, kind of an important announcement. I want to let you know, all of you know, about a decision I've made regarding social media. It is my intention to go offline for all of my personal accounts in all of the social media venues I currently have accounts in within the next week. That means that I will be removing my personal Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Google Plus accounts, and I'm going to take my personal Ravelry account and make it more or less inactive. I'm making this announcement because there will be people who read into this move that I'm leaving XRX, and I want to assure all of you that is absolutely not the case. But I am running two companies now, XRX Inc. and Hopscotch Software, and my ability to work on both and keep up with the social media demands is no longer sustainable. I need to concentrate on the actual work, and after that, I'd like to make sure I just have a little time for my family. We have great people in place in all of those social media venues who will make sure that we are there for you when you have questions. I will continue to do marketing for Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. I will continue to attend and be a host at Stitches. I will continue to attend TNA shows and other industry events as I am able. I will continue to do Fiber Hooligan podcast every Monday unless I'm traveling. I just won't be engaging the world personally on social media anymore, and I hope you'll understand. Tammy Burke is already doing a wonderful job with our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. She just recently became an admin of the Podcaster Throwdown group as well, so I know that you'll all be in good hands. I want to thank you for your friendship, patience, and support while I make this transition. Okay, I want to make sure you also know that I'm still, even though I won't be on social media, I'm still eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious holiday week. Remember, the only thing being better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.